Hello, Aquarius, and welcome to Good as Gold, a mid-year reading focused on art as enterprise, self-esteem as a creative force. That one's very Aquarian. That's this particular reading has taken me a while to figure out these charts. You would think it might go a little quicker since I've got so many planets in Aquarius, such as my Moon and Saturn and Icarus, the lover of peak experiences. That's a prominent planet right now, currently conjunct the galactic center. And so I was thinking today, after doing your charts this morning, thinking, what is an Aquarian theory of art? Who are any Aquarius artists? And I realized I couldn't name a single painter, artist, who is an Aquarius. Now, you know, if you know me personally and you've given me some of your artwork and I didn't remember that you're an Aquarius and you're laughing, please send me an email. However, I looked up some artists and then I looked at the charts again and I looked at some of the work of these folks, and I've come up with an Aquarian theory of creativity, which is that for the Aquarius archetype, not necessarily you, but just looking at Aquarius as a concept, which is probably a fun thing for Aquarius to do, that the creative flow seems to move in the direction of concept to feeling to originality without effort. So Aquarians are, as I just joked, you know, known for their love of that which is abstract, for conceptual things and that are not necessarily emotional or aesthetic, but I think that is a surface layer thing. And I think that it's a matter of the order of operations. It's a matter of where the point of entry into the creative matrix is. And it's a very interesting pattern that comes up in the Aquarius, you know, main overlay. If we start Aquarius as house one, and then proceed with Pisces as house two, and then Aries as house three, this is where I first spotted the pattern of concept or idea into feeling and emotion into originality without effort. Now, I'll probably explain that a couple of times and break it down for you. But let's start with Aquarius itself, which is the sign of, I think it is the sign of abstract thought. I think that if there's one sign that I would give the quality of manipulating an idea, like in three or four dimensional space, and being able to turn it around and around and examine it from every different point of view and then project that out over time, Aquarius would be the one. It is a sign that is inventive. It's known for inventors. It is more normally attributed to science than to art, which is why I became curious about who some, you know, well-known artists were. And here's who I came up with. Somebody I hadn't heard of called Oswald Achenbach, a German painter, who exemplifies one pretty interesting branch of my theory, and I'll come back to him. Robert Motherwell, who is a modern artist, 20th century guy, made very bold, almost overwhelmingly bold and large statements with huge blotches and explored contrast and symmetry, I think maybe are the best ways to say what he did. Worth looking up all of these people to see examples of how the Aquarius creative mind works. So there's Achenbach and Motherwell, Yoko Ono, who I think is brilliant, and whose work is conceptual. She is a conceptual artist, if there ever was one, and she was one of the people who was famous for turning, you know, pure concept into art in many different contexts, and was a very successful artist at the time that she met John Lennon. Norman Rockwell. Now, here's somebody who's a controversial figure, and by many critics, not even considered an artist. He's more considered a guy who painted very nice Hallmark paintings, but I think slowly he's going to gain respect as a portrayer of, a version of Americana. And then my favorite of the lot, Edward Manet, also born with the sun in Aquarius. Now, I think that apart from Achenbach, who I haven't really looked at his work closely enough to understand the conceptual basis of it, he painted a lot of misty scenes. He loved painting misty scenes, which illustrates the Pisces presence in the sign Aquarius, because Aquarius is the sign before Pisces. It's also the sign of the water bearer, and so there's a relationship. There's water bearer followed by water. It's almost as if the water bearer went to the river of Pisces and then started walking backwards around the zodiac. The conceptual level of these artists is brilliant, and yet you still feel. So it goes from idea to feeling. Now, an example is Eduardo Manet, who painted one of the most famous paintings that is credited with being the cusp of, or one of the events on the cusp of, of not erotic art, but of modern art. And it's an erotic painting, in a sense, of it's called Luncheon on the Lawn, basically. It's two men in suits of the day, kind of dandies with hats and flourishy type of things, at a picnic in a kind of a rural scene, and a nude woman sitting among them as if nothing is wrong, like as if she's not even naked. And she's looking right at the character, fully acknowledging the viewer, almost provoking the viewer. And then there's a partially dressed woman in the background who seems to be floating above the picnic, but that's just a matter of perspective, but it's kind of dreamy in that she's also presented as a figment of the imagination. And what's interesting about this, I mean, it's not the most impressive photo of painting that you've ever seen at first. And you wonder, like, what is this? But it was hugely controversial in its time, and it provoked art. Now, let me see if I can, I'm going to read you a little bit here, because I think this may hold a creative key. So let me read this little bit from Wikipedia, which seems trustworthy. Okay, so here's the Wikipedia description, and then there's a commentary that was written that's contemporaneous to the piece, so it's at the same era. In 1863, 150 years ago, Manet shocked the French public, it's possible, by exhibiting his Le Déjeuner sur l'herbe, Luncheon on the Grass. It is not a realist painting in the social or political sense of Daumier, but it is a statement in favor of the artist's individual freedom. The shock value of a nude woman casually lunching with two fully dressed men, which was an affront to the propriety of the time, was accentuated by the familiarity of the figures. The painter was familiar with Manet's wife, Suzanne Leenhoff, and his favorite model, Victorine Meurent. Both posed for the nude woman, who has Meurent's face but Leenhoff's plumper body. Her body is starkly lit as she faces the viewer. So it's kind of like almost like a photograph in that it's falsely lit, but painted. The two men are Manet's brother, Gustave Manet, and his future brother-in-law, Ferdinand Leenhoff. They're dressed like young dandies. The men seem to be engaged in a conversation, ignoring the woman. In front of them, the woman's clothes, a basket of fruit, and a round loaf of bread are displayed as in a still life. In the background, a lightly clad woman bathes in a stream. Too large in comparison to the figures in the foreground, she seems to float above them. The roughly painted background lacks depth, giving the viewer the impression that the scene is not taking place outdoors, but in a studio, which is probably true. This impression is reinforced by the use of broad photographic light, which casts almost no shadows. The lighting of the scene, in fact, is inconsistent and unnatural. The man on the right wears a flat hat with a tassel, a kind normally worn indoors. Despite the mundane subject, Manet deliberately chose a large canvas size, normally reserved for historical subjects. The style of the painting breaks with the academic traditions of the time. He did not try to hide the brush strokes. The painting indeed looks unfinished in some parts of the scene. The nude is a far cry from the smooth, flawless figures of Cabanel or Ingres. Okay, so here we have an idea that is expressed as, a feeling. I mean, this is provocative. Well, that's up to the individual, whether it's provocative conceptually or as a feeling, I think. But certainly it evokes a feeling to see this nude woman casually hanging around in the middle of the 19th century with these men. It's like really kind of iconoclastic to do this. And so here we have, I think, the perfect example of an Aquarian piece of art. First of all, it doesn't have to obey the normal laws of beauty. Second, it has to be meaningful. There has to be an idea that's meaningful, and it presents itself in a social context. It's a group of people, and it has an impact on a larger group of people, high society, the art institution of the era, and all of that stuff. Then it basically changes the history of art. I don't know if he intended to do this or if it was even possible to intend to do this. And there you have it. I mean, it looks so ordinary on the surface. And then as you start to analyze it, you see how much there is to it. And this, I think, is a way that your mind may be able to work in a creative sense. And if nothing else, I think that it is useful, acceptable, when appropriate, to go from a pure idea rather than a visual, though we don't really know what came first, because I haven't read any, you know, notes to say how the artist conceived of this. But it could very well have been a concept, and the idea is the strongest part. The painting is subordinate to the idea, and that's evidenced in that the rules of normal beauty are not followed. Very important concept for Aquarius. It is iconoclastic, it breaks the rules of the time, and it establishes the painter as a serious contributor, partly due to the controversy that it caused. And I've seen this painting, and I've seen it in art history textbooks, and I always have the same response to it, which is, the more I look at it, the more interesting it gets. And that's you. All right, let's go. Let's take a couple of houses here in your chart. Now that we've kind of got an idea on the table, and let's see how this establishes itself in further in, and also in terms of how you express yourself and how the kinds of chances that you're willing to take. The second house in astrology is the house that is associated with one's resources and also with the psychological idea of self-esteem and self-respect. And what's interesting about Aquarius, followed by Pisces, is that it expresses a kind of infinite well of creativity on one level. That is what Pisces is about. But it's framed in this conceptual framework of Aquarius. It always has to be an idea. There always needs to be a concept. That's the Aquarius part of me that loves a theory to work with. And especially in the appreciation of art, there is nothing that can open my eyes to a painting I don't understand or don't quite recognize the beauty of, but an idea about that painting. And then the idea tends to promulgate more ideas in my mind, and then suddenly the painting comes into view. I'm planning to print this thing out and look at it for a while and relate to it and see what else emerges out of this image. If nothing else, it's a fabulous tarot card. All right, so where we get the self-esteem piece of Pisces is almost as if the concept has gone missing. Now, you always have Pisces as your second house if you're using whole sign houses and your Aquarius rising, which is fair to do no matter what house system you use, to consider everything that in the sign after your sign to be the second house. That's why it's called whole sign houses. And this is almost like a missing idea. Pisces can have that sense of what's gone missing. Can also have that sense of finding everything that has gone missing. If Pisces is the dustbin of the zodiac, that's where it all goes. And that is your kind of resource for, you know, drawing out all this beauty that you have the ability to relate. And so it's almost as if you have access to all of the discarded ideas of the human race and the various things that are tossed out in the trash, and the ideas that were not recognized for how good they were, and you then can develop them. And that would mean the ideas that you've had that you didn't realize how good they were. And I suggest that if you are involved in any form of creative process, that your own past material may serve as some of the best inspiration for your current work. It is of value. Now, in terms of self-esteem, if you can imagine this as a missing concept or a concept that's so ubiquitous that it doesn't have a name, it's not defined, it's not clearly extant, that's pretty interesting. But now there's something special about Pisces, namely in the form of several slow-moving planets that have either been discovered fairly recently or fairly recently arrived. And those planets include Neptune, which can increase the quality of either self-esteem as a non-existent concept, or sometimes serve as a kind of a drain of self-esteem, because Neptune has, as does Pisces, a way of negating itself. It can create a feeling of invisibility. It can create a feeling of not being recognized exactly for who you are, or a feeling of being isolated or misunderstood. And the important thing is that you not be an alien to yourself, that you be familiar with your own, first of all, the intricacies of who you are, which basically, because Pisces is involved, are infinite, and that you draw from that well, where it seems like there's nothing, be it empty space or no ideas, there is definitely something. And what Neptune has really done is refresh the waters of Pisces. It's as if now there is, which is always nice, a river flowing into the delta that is Pisces. Now, also in Pisces is Chiron. And what Chiron may be doing is pushing the issue of self-esteem to a crisis point where there didn't seem to be any previously, or it was invisible, and now suddenly Chiron has come along like an optical focusing device, which is one of the ways that it functions, and has given you a microscope into how you really feel about yourself. And when you blow those elements up really large and look really closely and study what's in there, in that kind of a vault of everything that's just been sort of stashed away, you can see that there's a fairly complicated environment in there, but that there is substance and that there is the power of healing. And so in some ways, your whole story is a story of cultivating self-respect. And that, in the Aquarian kind of reality, can come with some tension, because one of the things about Aquarius is, one of the inherent contradictions of Aquarius is, that it is the sign of groups and to some extent the sign of conformity, right? Can be very, you know, Aquarian reality can be very lockstep. I mean, the internet is an Aquarian reality. Many of the technological advances of our era can be ascribed to the energy of the sign Aquarius. And we know how brutally fascist and uncooperative technology can be. But then there's the layer of human feeling right below that. And that's the place to stay. And that's the place where it may feel very challenging to exist there, because you are indeed distinctive, which is the other side of Aquarius, that there's this conformist side, but that tends to push out individuality like an oyster produces a pearl. And so there is that tension between kind of blending into humanity, but also emerging in a distinctive way that is not necessarily that pleasant. It can kind of be a collision with culture in a lot of ways, as Manet discovered with his painting. But I have little doubt that he kind of knew the impact that this painting would have. Or at least he knew that it would kind of stir things up a bit. I'm not sure he knew that it would become one of the most respected paintings in the history of modern art. Okay, another point in Pisces, the self-value house for you is Borsisi, and this is about what you believe to be true about yourself. And I'm going to leave the discussion of Pisces with Borsisi, because this is the crux of the whole business for you, particularly since Chiron is making a series of conjunctions to Borsisi, which is focusing what you believe to be true about yourself as the central healing issue of basically your self-value. And that can be said another way as, believe that you possess value and you will create that value. Believe that you are worthy of whatever and you will create that. Understand the nature of guilt and you will realize that guilt is a judgment that does not have to be there. This is a difficult house to have as your house of self-esteem. I will say that it shows that below the surface of Aquarius, which can be very well presented and cool and easygoing and reasonable, is a layer of basically of pure feeling, where there needs to be no sensibility whatsoever. Nothing needs to make sense. It's all about the world of basically pure feeling. And that is an initiation to come through. I mean, once you enter that, you really gotta swim or drown. And if you keep swimming, you emerge at the third sign in your chart, in the third house, which is Aries, which is going in so deep that you know yourself so well that you emerge as original with no effort, without trying. The effort was all in the self-understanding. And so this is where, you know, if you have any inclination to originality, focus on self-understanding. That will lead to self-respect, and then you are very naturally a distinctive, unique, and an original person whose life is a statement. All right. So this leads to Taurus in the fourth house. And what we get with Taurus in the fourth house is a reminder of how solid your foundations are. There is a need to, even though Aquarius, as my old teacher Dave Rell said, once when trying to define when the age of Aquarius began. He was hyper Aquarius. He had many planets in Aquarius. And he once said something that I'm sure many people would find offensive. I thought it was funny and also observant. There's some point in the early 20th century where I forget what he used as a, you know, a demonstration of that, but where he believed that the standard of art no longer had to be beauty. And once he said, once the beauty piece was taken out of art, then the age of Aquarius began, because art could become purely conceptual, which was an Aquarius notion that could only be something emerging in the age of Aquarius in his point of view. It's a funny idea, and it's a cool idea, I think. And fortunately, there's plenty of people who believe in beauty, but beauty is getting weird, and anything can be art. And, you know, imagine, you know, using a commode in a piece of Renaissance artwork. People would have thought you were just a pure joke, but you could then in the 70s take a toilet bowl and put it in an art gallery, and people write about it, and many people would show up, and you'd get a lot of money for it. Okay. All of that said, the foundation, the grounding point of your life is the solidity and beauty of your home. So for all of that, all those ideas about Aquarius, there's something else going on, which is you must, to thrive, live in a beautiful place. You can tell me if that's true. That's what I think your chart says. And it must be a stable place. You'd probably rather own than rent. If you're going to rent, you want a long-term relationship. You probably don't like to move around that much. That might not stop you from moving around, but ideally you don't. And when you do move to a new location, you make home very quickly. You ground yourself by a number of different means. And that is necessary to handle the very fleeting idea patterns of the Aquarian mind. And you know you're capable of a lot of ideas in a very short time. And what holds you down to the earth is your home and the beauty of your home that reminds you that it is worthwhile and kind of feeds your ability to think in abstract ways. Okay, so now we come to the puzzle of artistic expression via of Aquarius, which is Gemini on the fifth house. And here again, we come to the expression of an idea as art. What would an Aquarius art exhibition look like? I mean, it might look like a bunch of ideas blown up to a monstrous size in words and put on the wall. That sounds kind of Yoko Ono-ish. To do something like that, it's going to have a sense of humor in there of some kind. It can't just be, for as Saturnian as Saturn is, Saturn also, by the way, really appreciates a good sense of humor. And I think looking at Manet's picture with this nude woman just staring down the viewer as if to be like, yeah, and there's a sense of humor involved, there's a paradox involved, there's a contradiction involved, and it is safe to enter the territory of contradiction and to express contradiction as creativity, to live with that. That also includes expressing the other side of what you believe, a famous attribute of Aquarius. I've got it myself, and I know lots of Aquarius people whose views are surprising. You might predict up to a certain point what they can think, but then they can totally pull something out. The most liberal people can have a very deeply conservative concept. The most conservative people can suddenly find themselves expressing something that is actually vividly liberationist. Let those contradictions stand. Let that be part of what feeds your creativity. Do something that is completely the opposite of who you think you are and see what that looks like. Express it in some tangible form, whatever form that is, and appreciate that this is a creation of your own mind. That sense of being removed, that sense of the observer observing the observer type of thing, kind of a mirror reflexivity that's associated with Gemini, very, very powerful fodder for art. And this relates back to the Pisces piece, because Gemini and Pisces are probably the two most dualistic signs that entering this world of kind of the missing world of self-esteem, where you dive under the surface and find out what's really there, you're going to find contradictions in there, and those can come out in the tangible expression of your fifth house. Remember that Gemini really appreciates things that are plain on their face, and so you can experiment with how plain and stark and simple you can make the expression of that idea. And because your mind is complex, there's always going to be a couple of layers in there that, you know, come out over time. But whatever your inclination is, I would just remind you to not be afraid to seem too pedestrian. Again, this luncheon on the grass painting, it part of the joke of this painting is how ordinary it seems painted on this ginormous canvas. It's 81 by 104 inches. It's really large and made to be noticed, and yet it's just kind of a painting of something completely, seemingly completely ordinary, but it's not. I'm forevermore, this is going to be my the inspiration of my own Aquarius creative fire, to remind me that how much you can do with such a simple concept. And there, and it's kind of snarky in a way. I mean, her clothes are piled up in front of the painting and all that stuff. It's like really in your face, and of course stark. So this, and then there's the oppositions, right? There's the two men, the two women, and then the state of dressed versus undressed. So it's playing with the Gemini thing to the hilt. It's a perfect Gemini kaleidoscope. Okay, now moving along, here we get to another layer of feeling. Underneath this conceptual layer, right, Gemini, conceptual layer, followed by sixth house Cancer, feeling layer. Cancer on the sixth is about work that nourishes. So that's also not something you'd read in the typical Aquarius handbook, you know. But really, when you look at the work of Aquarian scientists, per se, it is definitely work that nourishes. And I would remind you to make contact with that nourishing quality of your work, probably more than anything by staying well-nourished. Your workspace needs to be cozy. You definitely don't want the kind of workspace that's just a room with a table and no chairs. Yours is more like the room with the sitting area and the full kitchen and the bathtub. And you do very well working at home. This is the perfect chart for working at home, especially true of Aquarius Moon also, because there's going to be that lunar tendency to gravitate to the sixth house. Now, next we get to the seventh house, and this is the kind of the payoff. You know, I'm going to cover a couple of more houses, but the seventh is really where something bold happens. And the way the something bold happens is in some form of an encounter or a confrontation, and it's likely to come through a partnership of some kind. There is likely to be some kind of huge gift that you encounter through a partnership of some kind, through an account, through collaboration with, work with another person. And in that Aquarius tradition of, is this person a friend or is this person a lover? It's something in between. It's some third thing. The relationship may have that quality of, is it friend, is it lover, or is it some other thing? I can't really define that, and don't need to define that so much. Aquarius and Leo mirror one another beautifully because they reflect the individual with the group. If you want to know where the real image of the most vivid image, perhaps not real, but the most vivid illustration of the Aquarius as group versus Aquarius as individual, that's the Aquarius-Leo opposition. That the group mirrors the individual, The individual mirrors the group. The group is a kind of a fermentation ground for the individual to come out, and the individual finds his own individuality by participating in a group. And these two signs work brilliantly together, and they are what I used to call early in my career the axis of creative will, that there's so much creative power contained on the Leo Aquarius axis, it merely needs to be expressed. And I'm thinking here that it's important that you not think of yourself as untalented or unable to, you know, render something perfectly or execute an idea perfectly. The chances are, first of all, that you're either better than you think, or you have the tenacity to be able to develop that skill in some way, to rise to the occasion of that particular job, that particular thing that you need to do. And that also what's going to come through is something conceptual that doesn't necessarily require exactly perfect, rendering. It can be left rough. It can be left imperfect. The rules do not need to be followed. You are, as are all true artists in a world of individual creation in a very small subculture where you get to set the rules and then put out what you do. And if you do this and practice doing this, you are likely to find that you succeed at it, and that is going to bolster your strength. I mean, it's a really fun process to work in this way as well. Okay, now I've got some notes written on the eighth house. Now, let's see. Virgo on the eighth house. I think the most pointed message I am getting here is don't let the miserly qualities of others get in your way. Most other people, including some that you might be intimate with, are not necessarily willing to make the investment in their own creative process, whatever that might be. It might be school, it might be art supplies, it might be having that room, having that studio, having the guts to make an investment in yourself. And so it's vital that you not use the stinginess of others as an excuse to be stingy, that you have to tap into your resources. You may have to, that may not include someone with whom you're intimate, including some, you know, people with lots of money or a spouse or someone like this, but that can't be a true reflection if you want to move forward. You need to, first of all, find the relationships, this is Leo on the seventh, where there is generosity. And they're likely to be the more open kind of relationships, not the kind of relationships that are contractually bound, especially where there's any kind of a contract in writing. They are more likely to be the kind of encounter that you recognize as being on level ground and as not being something that in any way dominates you. All right, let's cover a couple of more houses. There's so much fun in this. I'm going to do a very brief reading of the ninth because, well, it's an important one because it's an air house. It's Libra on the ninth for you. And this is basically saying that beauty is your religion. I mean, contrary to my friend Dave Rell's kind of funny theory of when the age of Aquarius began, I would say that for Aquarius, really, though, you know, who admits this, beauty would be a fine religion for you, and that there is plenty of mystery in there, and that the human relationship to beauty is every bit as meaningful as the human relationship to some abstract concept as God or what is printed in the Bible. I mean, how exciting is that really? How many people have really had an experience where they encounter God one-on-one directly and are filled with the passionate fire of the Holy Spirit? Really? How many? I mean, how many people do you know who can actually testify to that and say, that happened to me. I actually met God. Well, if God is so portrayed throughout all these books of the Bible, and at last count, 50 million websites telling us what and what not to do. Okay, bring them on. Let's have a conversation about this. If I'm so sinful for painting a nude in the park with two guys, let's have a trial with God as the judge. We're ready. Okay, beauty as your religion. There is deep mystery in here that will start to take you back and back and back through time. And there is something of a tropism. You're being pulled in there by the North Node and by the eclipses that are still about to happen in Libra. Okay, a couple of more points here. One is that with Scorpio on the 10th house, which you have, there is a... You can be a very shrewd leader. But there's a reminder here of leading with service and leading, again, leading with nourishment. That making sure that your concept of leadership first is about nourishing those whom you lead, especially now. You have a very tense relationship to authority, just inherently. And it's possible to say that the whole concept of an authority issue is an inherently Aquarian thing, or can be analyzed very well on that background of Aquarius. And you seem to be going through a phase of claiming your right to determine all the things that other people tried to determine for you as a child, all the limits that were set for you. I think in the past couple of years, you look as if, because Saturn, your ruling planet, has been crossing your midheaven, that you now want to set the terms of your life. You now want to set your own minimums and your own limits, and you're not interested in what other people have in mind for your limits, and it is time to break through this, and you are there. So keep on going. All right, little joke here contained in the 11th house, Sagittarius, which is the home to really the most impressive cluster of minor planets that I not only have ever seen, but really could ever imagine. And there's a huge pileup right now on the galactic core consisting of Icarus, an asteroid about peak experiences, Ixion, a trans-Neptunian object, which is about second chances, Pholus, which is about the release of things, Kariklo, partnership, galactic center, Hidalgo, rebellion against stupid social conventions, kind of Aquarian, and Hylonomy, recognizing the plight of people who don't have anything, all grouped together on the galactic center. It's a very exciting combination. And what this is saying is that this thing known as the public is extremely diverse, not to be fooled, therefore, by norms, and not to be fooled by what the rules that are set are, and not to be fooled by any one person telling you what the rules to be set are. You can treat it all with a sense of humor, and you can be optimistic that your idea is going to have a home, and that there is some element of the public that you can relate to. And that probably the thing that will work the best for you is to put your work out as boldly and directly as you can, making no comment about it, and seeing what happens, seeing who you reach, seeing what comes back to you, and remembering for sure that there is someone who will recognize you, if that's important. In some ways it is, especially if you know you have to get by or thrive as an artist. And, you know, we kind of live straddled between the nothing is sacred and nothing is shocking time period. And so, you know, if you think back to the day in 1862 when Edward Manet could shock the entire French population of, you know, stuffy art critics and painterly people in the Louvre and the Sorbonne and all that stuff by just having a naked lady, having a picnic. Thankfully, he came through and he did that. And really, the joke's on anybody who was offended. And that's a good, you know, point of view to work with. And, you know, again, the concept of a sense of humor comes up, because ultimately, whoever's laughing is the one who had the most fun. Okay, last sign. Very orderly reading here. I haven't gone through the signs in quite such a regimented way. Last is Capricorn, 12th house. Mine your ancestors. Not mind them, mine them. Go digging. Go digging in attics. Dig through ancestry.com. Dig through family stories. Get the box of old letters. Get the family Bible. Get the diaries of your ancestors. Talk to all the old people you can possibly talk to in your family and get all the stories that you can possibly get. Your ancestral background is an absolute gold mine, not only of ideas that you can fully appropriate as your own, but also in the potential for healing and resolution of things that trouble you, which is, and they do, which is trust you, which is exactly what I think the service of art to the artist is about, which is healing their sense of presence, their sense of being, reminding us that we belong on the planet, giving us a means to make sense of our experience on the planet, a means of making sense of our existence as a distinct human being, making sense of not fitting in, making sense of the need to fit in. I think you're going to find a lot in common with your ancestors, and that will help resolve a kind of an existential longing that you might have been experiencing for the past 5 or 6 or 7 years that you might not have given a name to. And then we come back right around to Aquarius, where in less than 24 hours there is a spectacular full moon with a lot of interesting minor planets involved, such as Magdalena, who I apparently need more instruction in, and then also Damocles, the story of the Sword of Damocles, which spends most of its time in Aquarius. Kind of a weird thing about this asteroid that it's kind of actually, it's so weird that there's a class of planets named after it called Damocloids, and Damocles is almost always in Aquarius, then it whips through the other 11 signs, and then it comes back and spends the rest of its time in Aquarius, and then quickly goes through the other 11 signs. Kind of a very strange and interesting concept associated with Aquarius. And Sappho, the quality that brings people together. A beautiful thing, and something that you have a knack for. And, you know, bring them on. Bring them together. Let's get this party going here in the human race. We're doing so many of the things that aren't necessary and could be doing so many more of the things that really are necessary. And that includes being with each other in human form and creating for one another and remembering that any act of creation is simultaneously a gift to yourself and a gift to the world. All right, my Aquarius cousin, if you are Aquarius sun, please check out your rising sign. You can find your rising sign out by listening, by looking on astro.com, putting in your birth time. You'll find out your ascendant. Check out that one. And I would hint that there will be lots of information for you coming through the Leo reading. And the Gemini reading, especially those two, just to give you a couple of others to check out that I would describe as being extensions of your own sign. All right, I'm going to call it a day here at Planet Waves Astrology Studio and return, read the chart for Pisces in the morning. No idea what I'm going to say yet, but going to say something good. All right, till soon. Bless. And bye for now.